From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabricio. Tyler Meacham's film is more than just a profile of a fascinating character, though it is part profile of a fascinating character. It's about James Randi, the famous skeptic and magician who uses his knowledge of magic to expose psychics and fortune tellers and faith healers as frauds. The film is also about the nature of deception, though. It's what magicians do. They deceive you. But James Randi says you have to be honest about that, if that makes sense. Here's how the co-host of the program Mythbusters, Adam Savage, puts it in the film.
His point isn't to tell you that something isn't true. His point is to widen your scope of vision so that you will question the things that happen in front of you.
Today in the program, we're profiling Tyler Meacham's film. It's called An Honest Liar. After the news.
Hi, this is Elaine Clark, one of the producers of Radio West. Our free podcasts are made possible by KUER's generous listeners. If you're a fan, we invite you to put $10 in our tip jar. Text KUER to 85944 to make that donation. Thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Tyler Meacham's latest documentary may have started out as a profile of the eccentric skeptic and magician James Randi, but that's not where it ended up. It could have been enough to showcase the life of Randi, who shifted from being a famous performer to a famous debunker of psychics and faith healers. But as Meacham began to document this story, he found more and more layers. Layers that raised larger questions about the nature of deception. What's so ironic about the story is that James Randi, a man who has devoted his life to revealing the truth, had used his own form of deception to do it. Meacham's film is called An Honest Liar, and it's opening tonight at the Broadway Center Cinemas in downtown Salt Lake City. Meacham, by the way, is going to give a Q&A after the screenings this weekend. We'll give you details about that as we go along. Tyler Meacham is a filmmaker based here in Salt Lake City. His films include Sons of Perdition, about teenagers leaving their polygamous Mormon community. He co-directed An Honest Liar with Justin Weinstein. The film premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival last year. When we talked to him, Meacham confessed he wasn't the first person to come up with the idea of a film about James Randi.
Yeah, it had occurred to a lot of people before. And I'll admit it to you, hopefully no one's hearing, but I didn't really know James Randi before someone introduced me to him. A good friend of mine, and I had just finished Sons of Perdition. And, you know, when you finish a feature-length documentary, there's a period where you birth this baby, if you will.
Yeah.
And you spend a lot of time nursing this child. And then all of a sudden, it grows up very quickly and it shows on TV and nobody cares anymore. And then you have to eventually figure out what you're going to do next.
Yeah, come up with something else.
Right. You made breakfast, now time to make lunch. Right. A friend of mine, Thomas Guthrie, who's a local producer as well, kept hounding me and saying, check out this guy, James Randi. Check out this guy, James Randi. And when I read him, I thought, oh my goodness, nobody has done a film on this gentleman. Come to find out that a lot of people wanted to. Thomas and I reached out to the James Randi Educational Foundation and convinced them that we could do a documentary about them. Not too long after that, I ran into Justin Weinstein at a film festival. He had just come off editing Being Elmo, and we literally teamed up together and said, let's make this film. So 3 years later, here we are.
I want to come back to that, the pitch you made to Randi himself. But let me ask you whether there's something in this story that resonates with you personally. You have an experience with Mormonism, raised Mormon, left the church, your own kind of questions about all of that. Justin Weinstein talked about how he also lives in a kind of skeptical world in a sense. So I'm guessing you both connected on that. But in on some level, is there something personal that resonated with you for this story?
Well, Justin Weinstein, who I just can't tell you how much he was helpful in this film, and he comes from a very different area in some ways as a former scientist and PhD. So he came to it. And of course, when I mentioned James Randi, he knew everything about him.
Yep.
So that really helped. but yes, there's definitely a theme within my work, as you can see, both in all of the features I've done and the shorts I've done and the features I am doing. And it is kind of about belief and about what you believe in and why people particularly believe certain things and why people believe certain things despite evidence and facts to the contrary. And yes, I was raised as a Mormon and consequently left that faith and have kind of taken that evangelism into what I do as my art and profession. And this film really intrigued me because here's a guy who spends his entire life trying to shake people and say, these are facts and psychics aren't real. And, you know, there are lies being told to you every single day. And I'm going to show you why you shouldn't believe them. And he's opened a lot of eyes, a lot of eyes. And for me, that was very intriguing, why this man spends his whole life trying to prove people wrong.
Yeah. He flew down to Fort Lauderdale to meet him for the first time. You've talked about how you were really nervous. James himself, who doesn't seem like he would be ever be nervous about anything, seemed a little nervous too. You say, let's go to lunch. And he says, let's go to IKEA, because I guess he likes the Swedish meatballs.
I guess.
And he says this to you. He says, okay, I'm in, but I want you to include warts and all.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Do you figure he really meant that?
You know, as a documentarian, when you first meet people, they kind of put on a show in a way. I mean, you go to somebody's house, they're going to clean up the house for you. But the 10th time or the 50th time you go to their house, they don't give a crap anymore. They just don't care.
Right.
And that's, as documentarians, Justin and I just kept going back and back and back and trying to find James Randi. Now, James Randi has lived his life on stage, on television. He has hundreds, if not thousands, of television appearances. I mean, he was on The Carson Show dozens of times, amongst hundreds of other shows, which I've watched all of them. But he's usually the amazing Randi.
Yep.
And it took
a persona.
Right. And he is. And he knows the camera's on and he's always joking and he's always laughing. And he's throwing his shtick out like he did, you know, when he was on stage back in the 40s. But it took a long time for us to see James Randi, the man. And when you set yourself up as the purveyor of truth, someone who has spent his whole life being honest and trying to find honesty, there's a lot of things that you can find that may not be honest, which in our own little peripeteum we found.
It's interesting. I mentioned that it seemed like an onion. Was that right? I mean, you started to unpeel these layers and then one thing reveals itself and then another thing reveals itself. I mean, I guess the question is, so you start thinking, oh, this is something, this is what the film is, and then I guess it starts to change, right?
You know, that's the beauty of making documentary films is you can know everything you can about a subject. And then you start to live in that person's life in a way. Now, James Randi essentially lived his existence in order for someone to make a documentary. Fortunately, it was us because he kept everything. I'm not joking. Every letter he wrote, he had CC'd himself. He kept them all in files, every email, every receipt, everything every television show he was on, every radio show he was on, he would tape record every TV show he had on VHS and categorized and cataloged. And then he just turned it all over to us and said, here, make a film, essentially. And yes, do you want me going through your receipts from 25 years ago? You're going to find some things that I wouldn't say are unflattering, but question one's person's motives.
Yeah. Which the film does. And we'll get back to that as we go. I don't want to give too much away. There's a bit of a danger of revealing too much. And so we'll try to be as careful as possible. But let's talk about Randi himself. As I said, I mean, it could have been enough just to talk about his life, which is so extraordinary. He grows up in Toronto. And it sounds like it's almost too good to be true. He leaves home, joins a traveling carnival before graduating from high school. Let's hear James Randi's voice. Let me play a clip at this moment of the film. An Honest Liar, James Randi.
I was pretty well educated on my own. The local education system in Toronto, Canada, actually allowed me to stay out of grade school, only going in there to take the tests. I was free to wander around Toronto, and I found the Casino Theater on Queen Street. I saw the Great Blackstone advertised. I'd never seen a magician before in my whole life. And Harry Blackstone walked out on stage and did wonderful things that I had never dreamed could be done. He had this young lady walk out from the side of the stage, and he cast her into a trance. And he said, Princess Astra, rise. She floated up into the air, and I looked very carefully, and I could not see any means whereby she could be suspended in the air and caused to move in the air. That was wonderful. I was transfixed. How could the man do such a thing? I determined at that moment I was going to become a professional magician. And so at 17, I decided I wouldn't graduate from high school. I left home, and I joined the carnival. I never went home again.
Let me stop here and just say, you totally lucked out with Randy in the sense that he's such a great storyteller.
Well, he is a great storyteller, and that's his living, is to create stories and tell stories. And as someone who makes magic and deceives for a living and creates stories, and a lot of times those stories may be elaborated or may or may not be true, he was very wonderful to listen to. And it was such a pleasure to, Justin was the one who usually would come up with the questions and ask a lot of the questions, and to have Randy elaborate. And sometimes too much. You have to take it back.
But I guess that raises the question that gets to a big theme, which we'll come back to in this, this question of the nature of deception. How much is James Randy revealing? How much is he deceiving us? It's the nature of being a magician is to deceive. Mm-hmm. But so when he's talking and telling these killer stories, are there ever moments when you're thinking, he could be totally conning us right now? I'm not entirely sure. Which part of this is the real, as you said, James Randy, and which part of this is the amazing Randy?
You mentioned that he left home and joined a traveling circus. And he would elaborate on these remarkable tales of, the fat lady and the electric woman. And they were just these remarkable tales, he as if he were there. And of course he was there. But I'll be honest, we can't find too much evidence that he actually did this. Right. Is it a great story? Is it an amazing pair? I mean, of course, young boy runs away and joins a circus. There's no conclusive proof that he did. There isn't any conclusive proof that he isn't. You have to take his word for it.
Right.
But in the meantime, you just listen rapt, knowing that this is a great tale.
You know, it's interesting. He has this affinity with Houdini. And there's this moment in the film that I want to play another clip, because it seems like – so what was his shtick? First, he's really good at the escape tricks, the Houdini-like stuff. He's a good mentalist. I mean, he's really good at it, right?
Mm, yeah, he's one of the best, if not the best outside of Houdini, sure.
And then there comes a moment, it seems like it was this turning point, when he realizes – so he's 21 years old, he talks about. And he kind of lucks out, and he predicts the winner of the World Series that year. Right?
Whether he lucks out or,
put together
or is correct, or maybe he's a psychic, we don't know. But nonetheless, he predicted
he got it right.
World Series.
Yeah. And that, as he says
– and not just predicted the winner, the score of the final game.
I mean, it moved him up a peg. And then so he's like, this is great. My career is really taking off. But then he talks about in the film, as he's walking in the streets, people would come up to him because he's kind of famous now. And they start asking him questions that are really personal. And this is the thing that starts to eat at him. Talk a little bit about that.
We call this particular scene the knife edge. And I think there's always, when you're dealing with an antagonist and a protagonist, someone who has to make that decision. And if you're going to base it on a superhero, there's a superhero, or let's just say Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones has he has a gift, and he does it for art, for archaeology. But his nemesis, I can't remember his name, the French guy, does it for money.
Right, right.
And every good superhero has a villain, and that villain typically has the same powers as this hero. And at one point –
and one uses them for good and one uses them for bad.
And we have an antagonist in our film.
Right. We'll come to that.
But, there's always this moment when they have to decide. There's always this moment in a main character's storyline when he has to say, how am I going to use these tricks, these gifts that I have been given? And Randy was given a gift. He was good at what he did, and he could use that as a magician, or he could go on the other side and become a psychic. And he had to decide at a very young age which way to go.
Here's a clip. We're here, James Randi, along with the magicians Jamie Ian Swiss, Richard Wiseman, and you may know Penn Jillette there also from the film An Honest Liar.
I was 21 years of age when I predicted the outcome of that year's World Series. And it was good for me. It moved me up a peg, but it also had some fallout. People would stop me in the street, literally, and start to ask personal questions, family questions and such, that they thought I could answer, and even offering me money to predict whether the husband that the girl had chosen was the right one. That was quite a comeuppance for me because I realized, you know, people really do believe this nonsense.
Mentalism can be a deal with the devil. It's an incredibly seductive feeling for someone to imbue you with that power. It's a very tempting thing.
Then you have to make a decision. Are you the sort of person that will look someone in the eye, and even though you have got no idea what their future holds, you're prepared to tell them something that isn't true, that may harm them, just to move money from their wallet into yours? You do not have that influence and power as a magician. You have it the moment you deny you're a magician.
I know that surge of power that you feel when you use a cheap trick to manipulate someone else into thinking you have powers that you don't have. And I think it's very much to the good of the world that when Randi felt that power, he backed away from it. And out of that feeling of that power came a rage.
That's the way to describe it, right? A rage. I mean, and that seemed to define his life for many, many years after that.
In a way, you have to feel the darkness in order to defeat it, in a sense. And it's, I mean, when we heard this story, it is storytelling 101, you know, with your main character. Your main character goes into the cave and deals with his own dilemma and comes out the other side. So, yes, it was a very interesting. And it was very interesting in his life as well because you know, Randi did live for a while as a psychic and did play those tricks. And fortunately, yes, he came out the other side.
That's Tyler Meesom. He, along with Justin Weinstein, directed and produced An Honest Liar. The film opens today at the Broadway Center Cinemas in downtown Salt Lake City. Meesom is going to be on hand for Q&As after the 7 o'clock screenings tonight and tomorrow night, and after the 2 o'clock screening on Sunday afternoon. If you got at all confused with any of that, you can just get the details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the fascinating and complicated story of James Randi. It's a story told in filmmaker Tyler Meesom's film, An Honest Liar. The film opens today at the Broadway Center Cinemas, so we're taking the opportunity to rebroadcast our conversation with Tyler Meesom, and we'll give you the details about the screenings as we go along. Well, you mentioned an antagonist, the nemesis of James Randi, and I guess that would be Uri Geller. Mm-hmm. It was such a weird time in the 80s. I mean, there was a lot of this going on. I hadn't realized that because you include in the film all of these clips from TV shows. I mean, we see Barbara Walters and all of these, like, what you would think of the kind of mainstream media talking to these kind of kooky guys. It was such an interesting time.
Like I said earlier, that James Randi recorded everything. Yeah. He recorded every episode he was on, every TV show he was on from all over the country, all over the world. But he also recorded other shows where people were on.
Yeah.
And it was actually quite reminiscent for me to sit down and watch these old 40-year-old VHS tapes, 30-year-old VHS tapes, and watch That's Incredible. Or, you know, yeah. Arthur C. Clarke's World of Strange Powers.
Right,
and
right.
You and I are from the same generation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you did not watch That's Incredible on Sunday night and were able to talk about it on Monday, you were outside the social group.
And what was the Leonard Nimoy one?
Oh, that was in Search Of.
In Search Of. Yeah, that's it.
So there were all of these things going on, and there was such a world of parapsychology. There was so much New Ageism and psychics and spoon bending, for goodness sake, which is just such a silly parlor trick. And Uri Geller
was the world's largest psychic. He was very famous, and he would get up on stage and he would bend spoons and start clocks. And James Randi saw this and saw that this guy was being very famous, using tricks of deception, silly parlor tricks. And so he went on a battle
yeah.
over the course of decades.
Follows him around.
All over the globe. Just continual battle between these two. And every time James Randi would fight against him, Geller would love it.
Yeah.
Because you talk about me, it's just more publicity for me. So he became more famous and Randi became more famous. And during the 70s and 80s, they were very prominent on television and radio and all over the world. So they kind of played off each other yeah. in this villain and superhero battle back and forth. It was really, as we say in the film, really fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I mean, we include a lot of it in the movie.
Well, I want to play a section from it, which I loved this part. And there's a lot of this stuff in the film. It's the section with Uri Geller on Carson on The Tonight Show. I want you to set this up for us. There's this moment where Uri Geller comes. Now we should mention Johnny Carson was a skeptic.
Absolutely. He was not only a skeptic, but he was a magician and a very personal friend of James Randi's.
And so Randi's on his show a lot talking about doing this debunking. He has him on. And he's going to have Uri Geller on the show. He invites James Randi to come on. James can't for some reason. There's a scheduling
conflict. He's halfway across the country.
Exactly.
He's in New Jersey.
Couldn't do it. But what he does is he tells the prop people how to set this thing up.
Uh-huh.
And it's really embarrassing. Set this up for us because I want to play this
well,
from the Carson
you know, Uri
show.
Geller would go on. He would go to these science labs and they would conclusively prove this man has psychic powers. He has psychic powers, and they'd prove it, you know, through science. And of course, you know, he'd use these simple tricks, if you will, in order to I don't want to say con these scientists, but make them believe that he had psychic powers. So of course, he got a little bit of press. Carson show wants to have him on, and they call up James Randi and say, "Hey, we want to have this guy on. What should we do?" And Randi walks them through some of the things they can do in order to ensure or help that Uri Geller doesn't have so-called psychic powers.
Yeah, like pick a ball out of these little canisters.
Right, and that's one of the things he did. He would, you know, they'd put a marble ball in a film canisters and he would choose the right one, or he'd bend a key, or he'd bend a spoon, or he'd start a clock, or he'd, you know, be able to guess what was in an envelope. All of these tricks that, to the naked eye, are actually quite impressive. In the end, if you do have these psychic abilities, if you actually have psychic abilities, and this is one thing Adam Savage says, if you have psychic abilities and you have the power to bend time or I guess what people are thinking in their mind, and you're using it to bend spoons, really, what good is your trick other than for you to be famous, to impress girls, I guess?
Well, then Geller goes on the Carson show, and he's... It's an awkward moment. Here it is from the film, An Honest Liar.
I said, okay, what I would like you to do with the little aluminum film cans, I would like you to coat them on the bottom with rubber cement. Don't glue them down to the tray. Just coat the bottoms and let them dry. When they're put on the tray, they won't skid then. I said, because the way he does the film can thing is he rotates the tray and he sees which ones move differently.
We'll start eliminating the ones that do not have the water.
Without touching them.
He is really suspicious, you know. I'm having a hard time with you.
I don't mean to be, right? I really don't.
Just keep looking. Okay, let me rest a little, all right?
All right.
They actually shut down the set for 20 minutes or so while he hummed and hawed and wondered how he was going to do something. Then they came back to the live audience after a big, long commercial break.
Charles, we are back. Your Uri was telling me you don't feel, what, strong tonight?
I don't feel strong.
Geller had to give the whole thing up. It was a real failure for him, definite failure, because Carson's people had followed the instructions that I gave them.
Don't be disappointed. I'm not.
Okay.
We thought he didn't have a future. And we were very wrong. Very, very wrong. We didn't know how wrong we were.
they didn't know how wrong they were, which is just an indication that Uri Geller keeps coming back time. And not just Uri Geller, but people like Uri Geller. And this is a big theme in the film. They keep coming back time and time again.
And there are some that Randy can defeat rather easily. There's a gentleman that we show early in the film named James Heidrich, who actually came from Salt Lake City, and he would turn pages of a phone book with his mind. Now, you know, and he'd go all over. He was all over. He was on That's Incredible. He was all over TV. And Randy comes on real simply and lays down some little foam pieces around the phone book and says, okay, now use your psychic powers, and it doesn't work.
Because he's blowing on the papers.
Because he's blowing on the papers. Right. And it's like so simple, but he fooled so many people until one guy can come and say, well, put some foam paper around it. It's easy. And that was the battle. That was it. But Geller just kept coming back, just kept reinventing himself. And I will say there's some things that Geller does that, to the eye, is remarkable. Yeah. It's brilliant what he does.
He's good at it.
He's the best. Without question, he's the best. Sorry, Randy. I'm sure you're better. I'm he's listening. Of course he's better. But
it's interesting. Uri Geller he represents something in the film. He's this contrast. He's this he's bigger than just Uri Geller. I mean, he represents something more, it seems, right?
Well, his is the search for truth.
Yeah.
Randy genuinely has this need to reveal truth. And a lot of people could say, well, why are you doing this? Why do you need to be a wet blanket? Why do you need to come in and to the cocktail party and tell everyone they're wrong? Why do you need to say, I mean, what's your deal with horoscopes? Let people read horoscopes. Who cares if they go to psychics? But there are genuine ill effects that happen when people are deceived. There are people that spend money and are hurt because they listen to psychics. There is genuine ill effects, and he is there's a part of me that wonders what his motivation is. Why does he need to do this? Why is it that he needs to spend his life, I don't want to say proving people wrong because that's too simplistic, but revealing truth or revealing deception? And I still don't really know why he does it. My only thought can be that he's genuinely a good human being.
To make his point, James Randi orchestrates these extensive investigations and these elaborate hoaxes. And I want to talk about some of these hoaxes as we go along. But there are a couple that you profile in the film, which gets us to one of the major characters, which I want to ask you about. And this reveals another element in this story, and that is this element of love that James Randi finally reveals only a few years ago. A very important part of his true identity, that he is a gay man with a longtime partner.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about this. I guess this is one of those layers.
It's another layer, yes. He lived his whole life as in the closet, essentially.
Yeah.
And, you know, to him, he says, well, everybody knew. But obviously it was a different time. When you're, you know, a 50s magician, it's not easy to come out of the closet and say that you're gay. He only came out when he was 81 years old, not but 4 years ago. And to hide that secret for so long, how can a man who spends his whole life telling people to tell the truth, but at the center of his life, there is a deception. And that's but one of the deceptions that he kind of hid in his life. He was gay and he had a partner, Jose Alvarez, who lived with him for 26 years.
It's part of the film is a love story between those two. It seems, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they do love each other. And it's a beautiful love story. They need each other in their life. And were this just a simple heterosexual, where they had sex, it would just be a lovely little story between two people who genuinely care for each other. But it is. We kind of didn't really go into this film thinking we're going to make a love story by any means.
You were surprised by that, were you?
Yeah, of course.
What a moment it becomes in the film.
It's also part of the reason we do tell this story and this love story is that an incident happened within the context of the film while we were filming. Yeah. And I don't know if you want to talk about it now.
I don't. So okay. we'll come to it, but that's all right.
That we felt inclined to tell this story about James Randi and his partner. But also, James Randi's partner was one of Randi's hoaxes. Now, in the 80s, there was this huge upsurgence of channelers, people who claimed they could channel 10,000-year-old spirits. And it wasn't just small. There were people doing it all over the world and charging large amounts of money. So James Randi got a little tired of doing this, so he decided the only way to prove that these people are wrong, because how can you prove that somebody's not channeling a 10,000-year-old spirit?
Right,
you really
right,
can't.
Right.
The only way you can do it is to pretend that we have a channeler. So his partner, Jose Alvarez, went to Australia, and they did huge amounts of press. And they said the great Carlos is going to come. And this is a man who can channel a 10,000-year-old spirit, a young boy named Carlos. And he gives wise treatums of spirituality. And they were all over the news. They landed in Australia. They were all over the press. They were all over the papers. Of course, all of the media that they gave him was complete lies. And within a week and a half, they had filled the Sydney Opera House with people who were followers of this supposed channeler. And then, of course, they revealed the truth, that he was nothing but a con.
Yeah. Let me play this moment, one of these from the film. This is James Randi talking about this. What I think is so interesting about it is what he's saying is, it wouldn't have been that hard, guys, in journalism there in Australia, to uncover the truth here. Here's another moment. This is James Randi from An Honest Liar.
His name is Carlos, and you've probably seen him on television or mentioned in the press. Carlos is involved in the mystical field of channeling.
Carlos, if you believe him, is a spiritual messenger who occupies the body of this 19-year-old Puerto Rican artist, Jose Alvarez.
The Carlos hoax was to show that the media would fall for both of these stunts if they sounded attractive enough, and they wouldn't really investigate too carefully. So one of the very first things we did to introduce Carlos to the public, we made up the press package that we presented to the Australian press.
What trash this is.
We even invented newspapers and magazines that never existed, theatrical magazines particularly, announcing the appearance of the great Carlos at such and such a theater that didn't exist. But no one in the media bothered to check up on one of these details. They could have picked up the phone and just checked, and they would have found out that they were being deceived. It didn't happen.
One man who's been making a name for himself here in the United States is now doing the same in Australia. Jose Luis Alvarez is a 19-year-old channeler.
By 60 hours after we had arrived, we had 8 major TV appearances, headlines in newspapers. Everyone in Australia pretty well knew that Carlos was there.
He suckered him.
Yeah. And not just a few people, but hundreds, if not thousands and thousands of people.
Oh, it's amazing. And this is the thing that's so interesting about the film. There's another moment, which we may or may not be able to get to, another hoax that plays a major role in this. And the question comes up, was it mean-spirited? Was it nasty? Was it dishonest? Because people got really furious.
And Randi's caused people to lose their jobs and lifetimes of work thrown away because he, you know, an entire professions because he puts down little pieces of paper around a phone book. And he points a finger at it. I mean, imagine the media must feel after they revealed that this guy was just a con and everyone who had him on his show and everyone who, you know, perpetrated this myth was guilty. And they should be called out. Journalists, media, us, me and you should be called out for not checking facts. The great thing about Randi and the great thing about magicians is, look, magic is remarkable. It really is. We are deceived and we see things that are amazing. But behind the magic, it's actually rather dull, I'll be honest. And there's a reason they don't tell you how they do it. But behind the magician is pre-production.
Yeah.
There's something I just respect out of this long-standing, how can you set up a magic trick over the course of months, weeks, years? And also, how can you tell a secret? I'm the worst at it. I just automatically want to blurt out how I did it. Look what I did. This is how I did it. It was awesome, huh?
Yeah.
But they keep this secret, and that's something Randi did in this hoax and did his whole life.
Yeah.
How can I set up this elaborate hoax with newspapers and press kits and radio and television? And he would invent these, you know, he wrote an entire book and they would sell artifacts, Tears of Carlos and, you know, rocks from the Atlantis, you know, just to prove to people how silly this is when I just pulled the rug out from under you.
Let's talk about the faith healing racket. This is another phenomenon of the, well, may still be, but it was a big thing in the 80s again. And Randi talks about – James Randi talks about in the film how he would go to these tent shows and sort of see how it worked. And a man named Peter Popoff comes into Randi's sights, set this part of the film up for us?
Well, Randy obviously saw these faith healers, and he saw that they were not, you know, they'd go around and they would claim that they could heal people. And they were collecting millions of dollars, but in a lot of ways they were hurting individuals because they were telling them, don't go to doctors, come see me and I'll heal you. And they would, you know, have them throw away their medicine. And they would, you know, this man, Peter Popoff, was making $25 million a year traveling around doing these tent shows. And he would stand up and he would have these huge audiences and he would stand up and he'd say, you know, Margaret Hansen, you have arthritis and you live at this address. And he would receiving this revelation from God. And it was remarkable and amazing. He would know people's addresses and names and their ailments and their brothers and their sisters. And it was truly amazing. And Randy didn't know how it was done.
Yeah.
He followed this man around. I mean, we only show in the film that he came to one or two of the shows. He followed him around the country. I mean, he just went after this guy and dressed up in disguises and eventually put together this Ocean's 11 type team full of investigators and mentalists and people who dressed up. And, you know, he really went after this individual and really tried to prove him as a fraud.
Yeah. Well, here's the moment when there's a man by a security guy named Alec Jason who... somebody sees the earpiece.
Yeah, Banachek. Steve Shaw, who's one of the greatest mentalists in the world right now. Amazing. But he went to one of the revivals, was around collecting the money in buckets, and saw a little earpiece in Peter Popoff, the preacher's ear.
Alec Jason goes in, dresses up like a security agent, goes into the auditorium, and he has this equipment where you can see the frequencies, detect the frequencies, the radio frequencies going on. And he lucks out. He happens to hear this radio frequency. Here's another moment.
Oh, you're going to give away the secret?
Oh, should I not? No, I don't need to.
It's just such a beautiful moment in the film of revelation and realization that I'd rather people see it.
Okay,
Doug,
okay,
is that okay?
No, of course it is.
Let's just say that it's a great moment, folks.
It's a great moment. And Randy wins the MacArthur Genius Award because of it. And he basically reveals, let's just say that, he reveals Popoff as being a fraud.
Yeah, and essentially for a while ruins the guy. He goes on Carson and reveals his trick, if you will. And it's just another victory in James Randi's long career. And it's not – but again, he did it. He didn't just prove it once. He followed him around. He dressed people up. He had a man dress up as a woman and pretend his name was Bernice Manikoff, and they healed him of ovarian cancer, you know, just so he could conclusively prove this man is a fraud. I mean, he followed him for years. And it's not just Randy. It's not enough to just say you're wrong. He has to really show you in a scientific way that you're wrong with numerous evidences.
Tyler Meesom, he along with Justin Weinstein directed and produced An Honest Liar. The film opens today at the Broadway Center Cinemas in downtown Salt Lake City. Meesom is going to be on hand for Q&As after the 7 o'clock screenings tonight and tomorrow night, and after the 2 o'clock screening on Sunday afternoon. You can get the details about that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take another quick break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the film An Honest Liar, which premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival last year. It's opening at the Broadway Center Cinemas in Salt Lake City today, which is giving us an opportunity to rebroadcast our conversation with filmmaker Tyler Meesom. Tyler and I were just talking off the air about some of the things we can and can't say. That's the thing about this film. There are so many kind of moments of reveal that I don't dare really say too much about, but we can talk about the bigger sort of picture. Let's talk about another hoax because it's an interesting moment in the film. This is called the Alpha Project. And basically, James Randi enlists these two young magicians to infiltrate this university. It's a big amount of money had gone to the Washington University in St. Louis for this project. They wanted to do these tests to see if parapsychology was real, to see if it actually worked. And so I get these two guys, young men at the time. Steve Shaw is one. He goes by the stage name of Banachek.
Banachek, yes.
And another great guy, Michael Edwards, is the other fellow's name. talk a little bit about this, because this is a hoax that James Randi basically gets started.
Well, again, back to Uri Geller, he would go into these scientific labs and be proven conclusively that that he was a psychic. But their methods were shoddy. They were slipshod. And they would never, you know, James Randi would offer and say, you need a conjurer. You need someone who is trained in the art of deception. Scientists don't look for deception. They don't see. They don't believe that people will fool them. Biology doesn't fool them. These people can. So he realized he can shout and shout and shout and say that these scientists are wrong, or he can have someone infiltrate it. So this scientific lab, the Mack Lab, run by a man named Peter Phillips, they had a huge grant, and they did this worldwide search. Find us two young psychics that we can test. And they found two of them. Of course, these two happened to be just
two plants.
James Randi had been coaching along. And over the course of 3 years, they tested these two young psychics in every conceivable way. Spoons and bending rods and guessing what's in envelopes and moving rotors and moving items and affecting photographic film. And it was this real interesting dichotomy between Randi, who obviously is a deceiver and has these plants, and the plants are going back to Randi, and then Randy's going to the scientists and say, hey, try this. And then he'd tell the kids what they were doing. So it was real inside baseball, back and forth between all these individuals. And in the end, well, I won't tell you what happens in the end. You'll have to see the movie. But needless to say, it was it's a hell of a story. It really is.
At this point in the film, these questions are raised about whether Randy's gone too far, whether that bit of deception, as I said before, was mean-spirited, whether it was unethical. You know, did he give in to his sense of the theatrical too? Because one of the characters in the film talks about how he felt bad doing this, that, you know, that he had fooled people, but these people believed these things. These were university scientists. I mean, they were earnest, you know, after all.
Yeah.
And Randi makes a fool of them. So, you know,
publicly
makes a fool of them. Yeah. That's one of the things that he does.
Yeah.
What do you make of that part?
Again, I think there's a beauty in how long can you keep a secret. These young men, kids, college kids, it started out as something of a frat house prank.
Yeah.
See how far we can bend keys and spoons. And they would do ridiculous things, like they'd break into the lab in the middle of the night and they'd bend spoons and then call up the next morning and say, oh, we had dreams about bending spoons. And they'd say, oh, it's a psychic hurricane in here. So at first it became this prank. But then you realize these human beings genuinely believe us. And I'm lying to them every single day of my life. I am deceiving them, and not just them, but hundreds of others, my parents, my friends, my family. They all genuinely believe I have these psychic powers. And these are good young men. They reach out to James Randi and say, we want a full scientist. We want to help you. So they're living a lie for but 3-4 short years. There are people who do that their entire lives. I don't know how you justify that or sleep at night, but towards the end, they really started to feel bad about what they were doing.
What do you mean an honest liar? It's an important idea in the film. What does that mean?
Well, Randi always says, magicians are the most honest people in the world. They tell you they're going to trick you, and then they do it. In a lot of ways, we all lie. We all deceive. We all spin personal narratives for our own good, whether it's for entertainment or to stay out of trouble. Except for me, I don't. But as filmmakers, we do that same thing. We, as documentary filmmakers, we take truth and we spin it in a way, or we compress it to try and make it interesting, or we, you know, don't include certain parts in order to tell a more concise story. Mm-hmm. So we all do this. We're all, in a way, liars, but in many ways, we're honest about it. And Randy's honest about it. He will deceive you. I am going to trick you. I am going to live my life tricking you. And by that admission, makes him honest.
Uri Geller turns up again in the film. It's an important theme in the film, this idea that you're challenging people's deeply held beliefs. And how dare you? You know, how dare you, James Randi, do that? It's their faith. It's their belief system. And Uri Geller doesn't fall into obscurity. In fact, he sort of keeps coming at it. And you get in touch with him.
Mm-hmm.
We see him in archive film before, but you bring us the today's Uri Geller, What did you want out of him? What did you want to ask him about?
I'll tell you, Uri Geller is an incredibly fascinating human being. And there's a huge amount of respect I have for the man because he did turn.
Did that surprise you?
What, that he
had, that you have respect for him because he seems like a charlatan to so many people.
Because he turned a simple trick into an absolute career. And not just a small career, but the man's a multi-millionaire. And he's lived his whole life in the public eye. And by and large, he hasn't really been caught. Not even by the great James Randi. Now, they've had this long and litigious relationship. I mean, they've said horrible things about each other back and forth, as evidenced you'll see in the film. And so we reached out to this man thinking we'd like to talk to him. And of course, we thought he'd never talk to us. But in the end, we basically said, listen, we're going to make a film about James Randi, whether you're in it or not. And there's footage of you in the film. So you can be a part of it or you can't. We don't care. And of course, at that moment, he jumped in and said, yes, of course, I'll do it. Of course, I do it. So we went out to London, met with a man, and he's insanely charming, very kind, very nice.
You get it now, right?
Oh, he's so kind. Yeah. He's so good and handsome and charming. And within 5 minutes, I was like, God, I want to make a film about this guy. He's really nice. I really like him. He's really great. Wait a second. He's, you know. And he sat down and he did talk with us. And he did reveal some things. And he was very eloquent. And he doesn't really harbor ill will towards James Randi, even though the man spent his entire career trying to prove him wrong. To him, he thinks, without Randi, I wouldn't be Uri Geller. He was grateful for James Randi. And in a lot of ways, without Uri Geller, James Randi wouldn't be James Randi. I mean, they really did play off each other. And if one weren't wise enough, one could think that they did it intentionally, you know, almost as a publicity stunt. They didn't, of course.
But. Yeah. Here's Uri Geller from the film An Honest Liar.
Do you know how many times the skeptics tried to shoot me down? Do you know how many times Randi tried to ruin my career? But they failed miserably. Pick up the National Enquirer or any other paper and you'll find a billion psychics. Look at the movies that Hollywood produces about UFOs and the psychic powers and paranormal activity. Are you kidding me? It's much bigger than ever.
You know, that's the question, right? I mean, there was a part of me that thought, oh, this is such a charming, funny time back in the 80s and the 90s when this stuff was going on. It's a bygone era. We don't do that anymore. We're much more skeptical. We scrutinize things much more intensely. But not really.
No, not really. It's just kind of come in a different form, in a different mode. You know, could Uri Geller survive now as a spoonbender? Absolutely not. There's too many television sets. You would record everything and play it backwards and know exactly how he did it. But there, we are still being deceived in many ways, in many, many ways. And James Randi is still out there fighting these charlatans, if you will.
Jamie Ian Swiss says that it's not about evidence for the public. He says it's about a way of thinking about the evidence, that we believe what we choose to believe.
Despite as much evidence as you can show to the contrary. Now, there are some people who will see evidence and facts. We've had hundreds of people come up to us and say, I was in a cult. I was a psychic. I was believing a lot of things. And then I started to learn about James Randi, and he completely changed my life around. And you know, to know that we're making a film about that is remarkable. We showed this last week at Tribeca, and Bill Nye, who's in the film, came up to us afterwards and he said, I am energized. I am inspired now. I am going to work harder for science. I'm going to work harder for truth. And I thought, God, we inspired you. You know, I used to watch you when I was 12, of course. Maybe I was a little older than that, but people are going to believe. People will believe despite so much. And who is a man like Randi to come in and say you're wrong? He questions everything people hold dear, be it God or psychic abilities or faith or horoscopes or silly things like he would debunk karate, you know, years past just because they would be using cheap, flimsy boards. I mean, everything that was wrong, he would have to point, and nobody likes to be told they're wrong. Nobody likes to hear that what you truly believe, everything you give your money to, is wrong. And even if they're presented that, sometimes they'll just turn right away and go back to what they're doing, which, of course, drives him crazy.
It does. Well, let me ask you this finally. There's a very significant part of the film that we can't talk about towards the end. And it's another moment that raises all kinds of questions about whether or not James Randi has perpetrated a hoax or been the victim of a hoax. And I don't want to say too much about that. Beyond, what were the ethical questions that you confronted as a filmmaker in telling this part, deciding how much to tell? You know what I mean? Without saying too much, obviously.
Of course. There is, within Randy's life, a deception is exposed that had been hidden for 26 years of his life, and not a minor one, something that has affected him throughout his life and has affected him during the filming of our documentary. We didn't know it at the time. It was just very fortuitous. I hate to say fortuitous.
It happened like a couple months.
It happened while we were filming. Yeah. Yes. And it came out, and it wasn't small. I mean, it was FBI was involved. I mean, it was a really big deal. And we went, oh my goodness, we're making a film about deception. And then all of a sudden, here is a major deception thrown into our lap, in a sense. And I hate to say that, because it was really did affect James Randi in a very adverse way. And I hate to be that ambulance chaser, because I'm, you know, a human being first, I would like to think of the storyteller second, or third. But we had to cover this. And within that, there is still a question of whether James Randi, the ultimate purveyor of truth, actually did use a con. And while we never reveal it, we as filmmakers kind of turn the tables on the audience a little bit and have our own little deception just to prove that, well, be careful what you think and be careful what you see and be careful what's in a film.
Tyler Meesom, he co-directed and co-produced An Honest Liar along with Justin Weinstein. The film opens today at the Broadway Center Cinemas in Salt Lake City. Tyler is going to be on hand for various Q&As during screenings this weekend. You can get the details about that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.